Now, Louise mentioned their basking sharks. We can say hello now to Dr. Simon Barrow, who's founder member of the Irish Basking Shark Group. Hello, Simon.
Good evening, Derek. Always great to hear Louise Overy talking about skates and rays. She's a very knowledgeable young lady.
Members of the shark family, are they not?
They are. They come in all shapes and sizes. And of course, my interest is slightly bigger than Louise's. I like the basking shark, but they're all great together.
So Louise mentioned the basking shark in passing there, Simon. What's the latest?
Well, as you know, basking sharks have been seen more and more frequently of Irish waters. And it's kind of strange, Derek, because in other parts of their known range, they're becoming scarce. For example, the Isle of Man, which was always the most famous basking shark location when I was young, has basically don't have sharks anymore. And the team there, the Manx Basking Shark Group, have given up. There was a lot of work done in Scotland over the years, including commercial operators, Basking Shark Scotland, and they rarely see basking sharks these days. But for some reason, Ireland seems to be retaining its basking shark numbers, and we have become a renowned global hotspot for the species, you know, which is very timely because we gave them legal protection under the Wildlife Act in 2022. We're surrounded by very, very bad news stories in the marine sector in Ireland, but the basking shark story is great and very positive.
Just for the benefit of people who have never encountered one, and there's always new listeners coming to the radio programme, will you describe a basking shark and tell us why it gets its name and why is Ireland a hotspot for them?
Well, it should be on everyone's bucket list to go and see and experience a basking shark in the wild. They are truly magnificent creatures. They are, the maximum ever recorded was 12 metres long. Probably the biggest in Ireland is around 10 metres. That makes them the second biggest fish on the planet after the whale shark. They are one of three planktivorous sharks, so they filter zooplankton through their gill rakers in their mouth, unlike obviously other sharks. They are seasonally abundant in Irish waters, and their appearance in the spring coincides with the first plankton blooms in the spring, phytoplankton followed by zooplankton, and it's particularly this cavernous copepod which they like to feed upon. There's a couple of different feeding strategies, but one strategy brings them to the surface. So they are filtering, ram feeding, where they push their open mouth through the water, filtering out the prey on the surface. And this is what's gave them the name basking shark. Or back in the day, they were known as sunfish. Great fish of the sun is one of the Irish translations of their name. Of course, we know sunfish is a different species now, so it can be a bit confusing when you look at the historical records. But this habit of basking on the surface during fine weather is more to do with how their prey distributes in the water column. So in some areas, the zooplankton is on the surface, whereas in other areas, you get a diurnal vertical movement where during the day, the prey is in deeper water. So that's what brings them to the surface. It's interesting, actually, because one of my colleagues, Emmett Johnson, back in the day, he put time depth recorders on basking sharks up in Donegal with the idea of trying to understand their surfacing patterns, because we only see them when they're on the surface. So if we could work out what brings them to the surface, we might have a better idea of when to go and find them, how many are there, that kind of stuff. And he correlated his data to many, many different aspects. And the only thing that their surfacing behaviour was correlated to, not very strongly, but was correlated to how sunny it was. So after all this heavy science, it actually vindicated the ancient kind of name for the shark,
the
which
sunfish,
is sunfish.
Yeah.
So the people back in the west of Ireland knew what they were talking about.
But they can dive pretty deep. I mean, I've seen some figures that they can go down to 3,000 feet. So will you just explain why would they be on one hand up at the surface feeding, as you said, or basking, and the other hand going to such depths?
Yeah, well, I mean, we didn't know much about basking sharks, even though they've been hunted. I mean, there's this classic statement that says the streetlights of Galway, Waterford and Cork were lit with sunfish oil in 1740. Now, sunfish oil refers to basking sharks. So there's been a huge historical, exploitation of basking sharks off the west coast of Ireland and Scotland and other countries like Norway. But certainly Ireland and Scotland have the kind of history, if you like. But we knew very little about them. And it was only until, I suppose, the 90s when some researcher, David Sims, down in Plymouth, started putting satellite tags on these animals. The first animal to be tagged with a satellite tag was actually a basking shark, not because there was a particular interest in basking sharks, but it was the only fish big enough to be able to tow this massive tag that was put on a little boat and tagged behind the shark in the Firth of Clyde many years ago. So this has really opened up a whole new area of knowledge now. And Historically, they were thought to maybe hibernate, because if you feed on seasonally abundant prey like zooplankton, you have two options. You either migrate or you hibernate. So it's thought they hibernated in the winter, and that's why they had such big livers full of oil. Now we know they're active throughout the year. They kind of probably do a move a little bit up and down in terms of latitude, but what they really do is they go deep. So in the winter, they go deep into deep waters off the western seaboard of Ireland, off the shelf edge, into thousands of meters of water. What are they doing? They're probably following their prey, because we know Canonus copepods actually overwinter as adults. They don't die like many other copepods. So, you know, most explanations of why animals do things is you first look at their prey and their food, because that's the kind of fundamental thing. So yes, now we know they go deep in the winter. They're here all year round. They're just not on the surface. Ireland is important in the winter, as is the summer. There has been some long migrations, some sharks across the Atlantic, some sharks across the equator from Ireland, gone to Cape Verde, some across over the equator in the Caribbean. But most of them actually hang around the kind of western seaboard of Britain and Ireland for most of the year. So more we know, Derek, the more we understand that Ireland especially is globally important for basking sharks. And it gives us a special obligation, responsibility to look after them, because they are critically endangered worldwide.
And pride as well, I would imagine. Now, the other thing I never knew was the fact that basking sharks, like great whales, breach.
Yes. Historically, when people reported breaching basking sharks, it was thought they had misidentified them and they were probably whales. So it's only been probably the last 30 years that people have accepted that basking sharks can breach. There was actually a fantastic study by a PhD student, Hayley Dalton, in Trinity, and she was looking at the sort of physiology of basking sharks, and she showed that they are endothermic. So they're actually quite warm. They're warmer than their surrounding sea, and their muscle structure is very similar. If you look at them, if you kind of cut sections through a stranded shark, the muscle is very similar to great whites. And if you go back historically, they are quite closely related to great whites. They're in the same family. So we know great whites breach. We know great whites attack seals on the surface and explode underneath them and attack them below. So sharks have actually all the physiology to do a very similar behavior. And they do it. They breach. They breach quite a lot, probably. But we don't really understand why they breach. Clearly, they're not attacking prey, because they're feeding on small little microscopic zooplankton. Now it's accepted they breach, and the next stage is trying to understand why they breach. And I suppose that's kind of some of the work we've been doing and published recently on trying to tease apart why basking sharks breach. Because to watch a kind of 1-3 ton shark leap out of the water and often clear the water and make a massive splash and thud on their re-entry is pretty impressive.
I'm sure it is.
And you know what, Derek? Some of the activity we've seen off Loop Head in recent years, where you can go down to Loop Head, stand on a headland, and I say to people, give me 20 minutes of your life, and I guarantee you'll see the second largest fish in the world jump out of the water. And there it does, in front of your eyes, without binoculars, in the comfort of sitting on land. You know, now that's one for your bucket list, isn't it?
Simon, Terry here. I know that breaching is not very common in other sharks. And when I think of the basking shark, you've said it yourself, it's the second largest animal in the sea after the whale shark. It can weigh up to 5 tons. Now, for it to jump out of the water to breach requires a huge amount of energy. Could it not be using this energy for something else? I don't understand why they would use that amount of energy, and we still don't understand why they're doing it.
Yeah, completely. And I suppose put the other way around, Terry, is that if it does take so much energy and they do it quite regularly, it must be really important, because you're not going to waste that energy if it's not. And, you know, as a scientist, we don't go down that they're having fun, they're doing it to entertain. It serves an important function to the shark. And there's been a couple of studies. One colleague in Donegal, they estimated maybe 5-6% of their daily energy requirements were used for one breach. And that was probably a bit of an overestimate. Another team in Exeter that had tagged sharks with data loggers that actually breached during the deployment period. So that gave them really good information on the mechanics of breaching, if you like. And they would say more like 0.0%, 0.05%, so half of 1% of their daily requirements were used for breaching. So much less, but still quite a lot. What they showed with their tag sharks is that one shark breached 4 times within 47 seconds. So not only have you breached and used the energy up, you've got to recover enough to breach again and again and again. Now, that was unusual. Most sharks only breach once a day, but they did show that they have the capability physiologically to breach four times within a minute, which is remarkable again.
Could it not be due to the fact that they want to get rid of parasites and that going up in the air, out of the water, then splashing back down dislodges the parasites? I mean, I've heard that. And another one is that it could be communication alerting to other sharks in the area that they are there, almost like, this is my patch, keep off.
Absolutely. And that, those are all the theories I put forward, Derek. And as you know, that's how science works. You put forward a theory and then you sort of test it and look at the evidence. So we were very fortunate, say, off Loophead in County Clare in 2020, where over a period of 3 days, just watching from land, we counted 93 breaches. And what we were trying to calculate is the inter-breach interval. Because you're sitting there watching these things and, you know, often your sort of impressions in the field bear truth, and then you try and collect the data to support your kind of theory. So we got the impression that it was all quiet and then a shark breached. And then when a shark breached, another one breached, another one breached, another one breached. It's as though they breached in response to a shark breaching. A breaching shark triggered another shark breaching. So we wanted to try and test that. And what we were doing was recorded what is called inter-breach intervals. And if breaching was random, you would just have breaches all over the place. There'll be no pattern to that breaching. But we found that there was quite a strong pattern to the breaching, where a breach did initiate another breach over a 5 minute period, and then it all kind of went calm. That certainly implied that a shark responded to another shark breaching. Now, to be honest, I never thought I would see this again in my lifetime. But in 2024, we got a similar breaching event over a 5 day period off Loophead again. And we actually managed to count 375 breaches over those 5 days. So the work we did in 2020, we managed to reanalyze with all the data from 2024 to see if the patterns were emerging in 2020 were considered in 2024. And it let us do exactly that. So, do they breach because they have a parasite on them? Now, basking sharks carry lampreys, which are these kind of parasitic fish that will attach the shark for a long, long time, actually, months at a time, before leaving the shark and actually going to spawn, actually up the Shannon Estuary here in West Clare. So we looked at where was the shark, how many sharks had lampreys on them, where were they on the body, and when the shark breached, did they land on the area the shark had lamprey on to try and dislodge them? So all these kind of simple things, based on the fact that we had a unique opportunity to observe shark breaching events many, many, many times. So that's what we've kind of done. And to be honest, in our opinion, dislodging parasite theory doesn't really hold up. Another theory was that they are cleaning their gill rakers of mucus and other things they've collected. That doesn't hold up because their mouths are closed. They do seem to respond to another shark breaching. So that makes you think maybe it's more of a social signal. If one shark breaches, another shark breaches. And the impression we got was it wasn't the breach, it was the sound of the breach. Because when they enter the water, very different to a dolphin or a whale, well, very different to a dolphin, is that they make a big, loud thudump. And often that's what you would hear, and that would draw your attention to the shark breaching. In our opinion, all the information lends itself towards a social signal. And on top of that, the time of year that they were doing it, some of your listeners might be familiar with this amazing Taurus display that we've been filming now off West Galway, West Clare, the last few years. First filmed by Ken O'Sullivan, I think it was 2015, when he was commissioned to do a programme for RTE on oceans. And we've seen it regularly since. And it's when all these sharks seem to come together in hundreds, and they form these round circular movements in the sea. Circles in the sea, as my colleague David Sims calls them. And breaching seems to be more associated with this behaviour. So he calls it speed dating for sharks. So sharks are gathering off the west coast of Ireland to feed in the spring. After they've fed well on our abundant zooplankton, they transition into maybe more courting, breeding behaviour. And as part of that, they start performing these round, circular torus behaviours. And associated with that is breaching. And we've captured these on drone during these toruses. So we don't really know why they breach, but the evidence we've been collecting suggests that it's a part of their reproductive biology. And I think the interesting thing, Derek, is that there's nowhere else in the world you can see this behaviour. There's nowhere else in the world we get the opportunity to study it like we have done off the west coast of Ireland the last few years.
Simon, not surprisingly, Ken here, I'm drawing parallels here in my mind with Atlantic salmon, because obviously they're well known. We don't call it breaching, but we call it jumping. But there's a sequence of jumping in Atlantic salmon that has always fascinated me. And most of the listeners will never have seen this, because on the films and so on, where we see them coming in Canada and indeed coming into rivers in Ireland and Scotland, we see the Pacific and Atlantic salmon jumping when they're silver. And they do that to jump waterfalls and so on. But in the autumn time, when the fish are gathering in pools, ready to ascend to their spawning areas, there's an incredible amount of jumping goes on, amazing amount. And it's not consistent. There's only certain times when the fish will jump and jump and jump, and they're jumping in one location, and it's different fish that are jumping. So reading your paper and hearing you describe what you found with the basking sharks made me think a little bit about what we were assuming was happening. What we thought was happening was that it was to do with gonadal development, that the fish were actually developing gonads, perhaps were feeling uncomfortable. But I'm beginning to think now, maybe, just maybe, is it something to do with speed dating, where these fish might be actually pairing much sooner than we think and then beginning to move upstream, rather than a situation where we assume the males went up first and then the females followed? And certainly the second thing that we often thought about was pressure, because you can see whole pools of salmon, not a single move out of them. And yet the following day, you can hardly see the surface of the water, but you see a disturbance or you see a jump. So it's fascinating, this whole idea of using up, in this case, fish that aren't feeding, using up extraordinarily valuable energy. It has to be for some purpose. So I'm fascinated with what you found.
Well, when you said pressure, Ken, what do you mean by the increase of just the number of fish, the density of fish?
Sorry, atmospheric pressure, I meant. Atmospheric pressure.
Atmospheric pressure.
Because we have some evidence that salmon are very sensitive to this. Again, just a matter of trying to discuss it and trying to throw out ideas. But this particular sequence has me fascinated, because I've never been able to figure out what exactly they're doing. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but obviously there's a reason for it.
And, you know, you really get the insight, you really get the opportunity to study this thing, especially in the kind of, you know, the natural environment where it's not in captivity. It was interesting, Ken, that actually both males and females seem to breach, which actually is quite a new finding. So we managed to get, I think it was 61 photographs of breaching sharks, different sharks breaching. And we looked at the gender and how they breached and how they landed, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's an amazing opportunistic data set. And not quite equal ratios, but certainly females breach nearly as much as males. And also immature sharks breach as well. So it's not just about being sexually mature. So more mysteries.
Simon, I came across an article recently there and I was amazed by it. It said that a breaching basking shark was responsible for the only fatal shark attack in UK waters. And it was in 1937, and three people were killed in the waters off Carradale, a small village on the west coast of Scotland, when a breaching basking shark unintentionally capsized their boat. Have you ever heard of that?
I have, yeah. But I can tell you, Terry, there's a few near misses. We were out only last late September. My daughter actually was driving the rib, and we try and get samples of these sharks. We've been trying to sample these toruses to see, is there a genetic relationship within these toruses, to try and again tease apart what's going on. We would expect the torus to be less closely related and actually aggregations of feeding sharks, but that's by the by. But the number of breaching sharks around us made us, we thought, look, the chances of shark and boat being in the same place at the same time is getting too high. And we seriously thought we were in danger of having a shark land on us. So we bailed out and we spoke to a couple of ribs that were out there and saying, like, we're leaving now. We feel like we've pushed our luck. And, you know, there was a few close misses, I must admit. I'm sure they don't know you're on the surface. They're just breaching and you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So we were concerned, to be honest, because there was a few ribs down off West Clare. And it is, you know, it's something we've talked about a lot on your program, Derek, is that kind of responsibility of us towards the marine wildlife that we're watching. And, you know, it's an amazing thing to see, but we really got to respect the shark. We've got to give them distance. It's an important part of their life cycle. And the potential for damage is huge. If a shark landed on our rib, you know, that would be toast. So that's the only documented case, Terry, that I've read of. But I'm pretty sure it has happened, but it hasn't been documented. And there's been many, many close misses, I'm sure.
Simon, you've got a conference on basking sharks in August.
We do. And it's part of that kind of, I suppose, global acknowledgement now that Ireland is the place for basking sharks. So we've, with support from the National Parks and Wildlife Service, you know, who gave them that protected status under the Wildlife Act in 2022, we're hosting a two-day conference in ATU Galway, where I lecture, Atlantic Technological University, from the 29th and 30th of August. Talks about sharks, their biology, what we know about it. We've got contributions from all over the world, from New Zealand, from America, from Europe, which is fantastic. Some online, some in person. And then on the Sunday, we're going to have an ocean literacy day on Achill Island up in County Mayo, which, of course, is the kind of spiritual home, really, of basking sharks. Not just in Ireland, but probably worldwide. It was the best documented basking shark fishery in the world. And the island community have embraced that history. And there's some fantastic display boards and stories telling the history of basking shark and basking shark exploitation on Achill Island. And there's one surviving basking shark fisherman left, Brian McNeil, a lovely guy from County Monaghan, that came down to go sharking, met his wife, stayed on the island. And he's quite happy to talk about what they did. And he's quite surprised people are interested in his stories, but why not? You know, it's all part of our history, I suppose, and also our relationship with the sharks. It's funny, what my colleague Emmett said to me a few years ago, Derek, he said, how many species or habitats in Ireland are we globally important for? Globally important mm-hmm. for? And he looked at me and said, the basking shark is one of them. And I think we need to respect that. So this conference is about that. We're having a workshop on marine protected areas, big area about how do we identify potential areas that we could use to protect that core behaviour of basking sharks. So there's a lot happening, and I hope it will kind of continue. The level of interest and awareness of basking sharks the last few years in Ireland is fantastic, and it's a really positive thing, and people want to go and see them and be in awe of this creature. It's one of, say, the better positive news stories in the Irish marine space. Longer may it continue.
Simon, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Derek. Baskingshark.ie is our website if anybody's interested in coming to the conference or learning more about basking sharks.
We'll be at the conference too. I think, Terry, you're going to pop down, are you?
I certainly am. You might come with me.
I will.
That'd be fantastic. Thank you very much. Thanks for your interest, team. Take care. Bye.
Danada, as they say in Spanish. Simon, thank you very much indeed.